Colin Podcast. My name is Colin. I'm here with Dom. Dom, how you doing? Good morning, might I add. It's very early in the morning right now in England.
Well, thank you. I believe it's almost midnight in the States, so happy evening and potentially happy morning to you too.
Yeah, the day is just about to become, what is it going to become, the 3rd or the 4th? It's going to become the 3rd of April in a couple of minutes here. As we often like to do, we will date this podcast immediately so that it sounds super old as soon as people are listening. Dom, I guess we are, of course, back today to talk about the latest Merge episode of Survivor Season 32. Before we get into that, I guess no real Big Brother Canada tangent to go on because, of course, as soon as we get caught up, I was finally able to watch live on a Thursday night, and at the end of the episode, Arissa announces the feeds are getting shut down for the next 3 days or whatever, so no updates there.
Right, and based on what I'm hearing, that one episode had the potential to be just fantastic based on everything that had been going on in the house over the past few days. There was so much switching back and forth, and even up until the very last moments of that eviction, things were liable to be changed, and yet the actual episode that we saw, even though it was extended to give them more time to put stuff in, it was just so underwhelming that I think people were almost happy that they don't get to see the repercussions of it.
Yeah, and I feel like we may be facing a similar situation now that where the feeds are down for these first 3 days of like craziness now that someone is going back into the house, where we're only, you know, we're going to be completely subject to only what we get to see on TV, and we're going to miss out on like the actual behind the scenes stuff. But Dom, enough Big Brother Canada.
Well, we're not going to go for 10 minutes on it today, but we can at least stretch it into like a minute and a half, maybe 2 minutes if we try hard. So I will note that what I said last week about Ramsay not doing anything bad yet or not really coming out under much criticism yet, strike that, reverse it. Ramsay has been really putting himself out there this week and working to correct that. So props to him, I suppose. It struck me, because this episode, as I said, there's so much that could have been in there but wasn't. It struck me just how bad a viewing experience the edited product can be in comparison to what everybody else can see on the feed. And I wonder how the people who only watch the episodes and never even check out the feeds, I wonder what they think the show is on like a fundamental level, because there's just so much stuff that they never get to experience.
Well, I mean, that's how I was watching Big Brother until, I want to say, the first season I ever even checked out the feeds was like BB13. I was just a completely devoted TV-only person. And it is like a completely different experience now being on Twitter and following people who are updating it constantly and seeing what's really going on. But I mean, it's not even a comparable situation. Were you ever someone who was, I guess when you're watching the older seasons, you don't really know what's going on in the feeds. But right. Did you ever watch casually before you got into it hardcore?
I remember a few summers ago, I think it was like BB13, BB14. I would like have it on in the background while I was doing work or whatever. But yeah, mostly I'm someone who just watches the show that they put together, but then I'm also following people on Twitter and watching clips that people send me and kind of keeping up to date with what's going on. And you have like you have these ultimate casual viewers who just don't have any clue that there's a world beyond that TV show, and you wonder like what they think is going on. It's like they're watching a completely different reality from the one that everyone else gets to see.
Oh, I totally agree. And I know you were watching Big Brother 14 closely because we podcasted about it. And I do really feel like when it is a great season, and obviously Dan probably single-handedly made that season like one of the most interesting of all, not to say that Dan was the only interesting thing, but like just having Dan in there alone is going to make it an historically crazy season usually. Like when it is like top shelf live feed stuff and you are able to really track it closely, I still think those are some of like the most fun podcasts we've ever done. Like I think podcasting about really good Big Brother is almost as good as it gets, like almost on the level of podcasting about The Genius.
Yeah, I remember, I think it was when Dan's funeral was going on, like double queuing the Big Brother live feeds and Breaking Bad, because that was going on at the same time. And it was like, it was just like the pinnacle of TV. And now you contrast that with this, where it has the potential to be so great, and yet it's so lackluster by comparison. It really makes you frustrated more than anything else that they're just not doing more with it when they could be.
Yeah, I mean, Big Brother is, at least for me, something I have grown to be accustomed to being frustrated with.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah, all right. So I guess let's finally now do get into some Survivor. And this, Dom, of course, very exciting Merge episode, although probably not one of the most exciting actual Merge episodes that we'll end up seeing. And probably one thing, as a theme that we'll get into about this Merge episode, is that it wasn't like that big and not that much happened. And to me, it's a lot like when we talked about the San Juan del Sur Merge episode where Julie quits, where it almost feels like Merge episode part one, and we're going to get part two next week.
Yeah, this was exciting by virtue of being the merge episode, and not because what actually went on was that compelling. And I agree that it does bear some resemblance to Samwon Dosa, and also to Token Dreams would be the other obvious example where, you know, Joe getting taken out really dragged that into two separate episodes. And I think when that goes well, you have this big build-up in one episode, and then there's this tension that gets carried forward to the next episode. And so you basically get two merge episodes for the price of one, essentially. But when that goes badly, as I think it did here, what ends up happening is what could have been a very suspenseful, very interesting outcome gets completely defaded. And then going into next week, there's just no... you don't really care about what the outcome is because you know what's going to happen, but you never get to see... the things that led to that. So it's kind of, you get all of the downside without any of the upside.
Yeah, and well, wasn't it in San Juan del Sur, at least, I know, like in Token Chains, Brendan was going to be the target and he won immunity, and then they just got him next time, right? And then but in San Juan del Sur, didn't like John and Jacqueline flip after Julie quit, and then like things actually changed? They didn't go the way that it would have gone had they actually gone and voted there?
Yeah, in Token Chains, you had literally everybody except Brendan and Sierra ganging up on the two of them. And so there was this question of, is everybody going to be able to stay on the same page and keep that under wraps for another 3 days? Or is someone going to like say the wrong thing and then word gets back to them and Brendan has an idol, so then maybe something could happen there? And there was potential for that to just blow up in their faces. And then in San Juan del Sur, you're right. It's I don't think we've ever heard the definitive story from John and Jacqueline of what they would have done, but there was this decision that they had to make, and then in the intervening 3 days, at least from what we were shown on TV, they kind of flipped their vote and went completely the other way, and that changed the course of the game. And so I think that's a case of it turning out well, whereas here, and maybe we'll be taking this back after Wednesday's episode, but it seems like it was clear what was going to happen, and that's still probably going to happen, and it's just a question of, is it going to change in some like minor detail now that Neil's gone? And if anything, Neil being gone and taking the idol with him removes any suspense that there could have been from that outcome.
Well, I mean, I guess that is the big question is it only just removing the suspense of, hey, the idol's gone, now they can't really feasibly find a way of bailing themselves out? Or could it be a situation where now that Neil and that idol are gone, this Brains Alliance is down to three, the idol is out of play? I don't know how much the players know about that, but they do think that Neil has the idol, and they presumably think that it's leaving with him. Might the target be so drastically reduced now that Aubrey can get through, and some, you know, the beauties, Nick and Michelle, are the new John and Jacqueline, and they start saying, hey, maybe it's time we start working with the Brains?
Yeah, and that's a hope, I think, that for the same reasons that this vote might be boring for us, it could be interesting for them, because now they don't have to worry about this four-person Brains Alliance that has an idol. That's got cut down to three people who are basically sitting ducks now, and so someone might start to think, well, we don't need to vote them out necessarily, we can use them for a few votes, or maybe flip now, get out someone on our side who does have an idol, or maybe has more influence at the moment, and that could be an interesting play that they would go for. And I think we'll discuss later on if we think that would be a good idea, but it's certainly one that they can afford to entertain now that Neil is out of play.
Right, and at least for me, the scene of Scott saying, like, I'm definitely staying with this, we're definitely picking off the Brains. I know Scott, typically, at least so far, hasn't been shown as being, like, super wrong about virtually anything, but it does seem a little over the top, as, like, would it, you know, if that really did go on to happen, like, the Brains just get pagonged, would they be including, like, the figurehead of the Alliance saying with certainty, yeah, this is about what's about to happen?
Right, and with Nick as well, it had echoes of Josh Canfield saying, like, oh, I think John and Jacqueline were 80% to come with us, and we're just going to pick off Jeremy, and then that's going to be fine. And then obviously that's going to get overthrown on him next episode, because how could it not after he says that?
Yeah. Well, before we hit the merge, Dom, someone that I'm sure we're going to be talking quite a bit about this week is Aubrey, who certainly had a huge episode here, and really interested to hear what you have to say about that. But before we get to the merge, they get back from that vote where she did the strike through thing through Julia's name and then switched her vote over to Peter. I said last week that I was open to the idea that maybe there was some master plan, that this was like some kind of signal, but it looked to me like it was I couldn't really conceive of a way that this could have some kind of like big payoff versus the downside of like forfeiting the argument that you were, you know, voting Peter out for Julia's benefit. Like, you're making it very clear to her that that's how damn close you were to just voting her out, is her name's right on there. And as we see when we get back here, Scott's furious about it and just about their indecision in general. And he says to Aubrey and Joe, you guys voted for Julia. And she says, I didn't vote for Julia. And he says, well, you wrote her name down. And that's kind of what I was getting at, which is, in striking through her name, yeah, you're not technically voting for her, it doesn't count, but you are voting for essentially two people with one ballot.
Right. As far as I know, there's no new information on whether there was some masterful secret plan behind all of this. So we're going to operate under the assumption still that there wasn't. And it does seem like the repercussions that we spoke about last week and debated how much of those would come into play are really coming back to bite her in a big way, as she predicted.
Right. And Aubrey is someone, as I've alluded to, that a lot of people are very much Team Aubrey this week. I'm definitely starting to get nervous after some of the certainty I may have demonstrated about Michelle last week. Maybe more on that in a little bit. And I don't know. I still feel like it should be said. At least I'm going to say, regardless of if this scene goes, you know, the strike-through vote becomes some iconic moment where had Aubrey not done that and she'd gone the other way, that would have cost her victory. Like, she goes on to win, and that's, like, one of the defining moments that got her there. I still say, you know, based on what we've seen right now, I think regardless of how this ends up going for her, this was a bad move, putting the strike-through Julia ballot still in there. I think she definitely should have gotten a new ballot.
Yeah, if it's iconic, it's because it goes against conventional wisdom about what you should do on Survivor, and that's because it's a bad move. Like, it's there's a good reason that you generally don't see this across the past 31 seasons, because signaling in that kind of way, not only that you want to vote one person out, but you could strongly consider voting somebody else out to the point that you wrote their name down and then had to cross it out, is just so, like, you can imagine why that's a bad move. We don't even, like, need to elaborate on that in detail.
Right. The reason that Crystal Cox screaming about Randy Bailey as she's, you know, casting her ballot to vote him out stands out is because other people realize, I don't want the person I'm voting out to hear what I have to say about them. It's not a good call.
Right. And it's almost even worse than that, because if you're voting them out, you at least have some expectation that they're not going to be there anymore and it's not going to matter. Whereas if you signal to someone who you know is still going to be in the game that you came this close to writing their name down and actually did write their name down and then had to walk it back at the last second, then even if they ended up being saved and you can kind of make that argument to them, there's still going to be this doubt in the back of their mind, like, well, you could have just wrote down Peter and it would have been much simpler and much easier for you.
Yeah. It's not like you're the head of household where you have to make it clear that these are the two people or more in some seasons that I want to be targeting for eviction. Like in Survivor, one of the benefits is you can, in any given round, just point directly at one person and only target them. All right, Dom. So Neil is walking around here with a pocket full of something. The other people come to the conclusion that he has the idol, which he does, in fact, have. But it turns out, I don't know if you even saw this, but Neil is saying in interviews now that it wasn't even the idol in his pocket. But nonetheless, yeah, so, this is like how his spot gets blown up.
Yeah, so it's a nice humble brag, Neil. Yeah. He's obviously having to relive this moment where his future in the game was snatched away from him and he wasn't able to get any kind of closure from it. And I imagine there's some part of him that does think and that wants to think, like, if I'd been left in the game, obviously I would have done the right move for the idol at this first vote and then we would have taken control and then I could have done this and that and so on. And clearly I would have just waltzed to victory from there. And there's part of that tone where it's like you kind of have to tell yourself that to get over what happened to you, and you can't really begrudge him for doing it. But equally, I don't know if he is a reliable narrator in terms of how he thinks the game would have played out from there.
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible to say, first of all, right? That I don't feel like anyone, even Neil, someone who was out there in the middle of the action, can say, well, if I hadn't been pulled, then this would have happened, then this would have happened, and then anyone could have won with certainty or whatever. But I do feel like with Neil, he probably has plenty of good reason to feel like he could have been in an okay spot, even if he felt like he had to use the idol that night. I think we will probably go on to see that this is still a game that's wide open and things do potentially change quite frequently, where Neil probably would have had some room to play either with or without an idol. That said, Neil is probably going to be overestimate his general chances in any given scenario in Survivor. But at the same time, I also don't feel like Neil would be the type to say, I don't think he would be foolish enough, honestly, to say, I definitely would have won if I'd stayed in or anything even close to that.
He does say in his Ponderosa video, which, interestingly, is edited in a weird way because they had to show it, I think, like they were recording it after he gets back to Ponderosa, at which point there were already other people there who had been voted off since then, and so they can't just do the usual thing of showing them going around the venue, because it would just be blatantly spoilerish. So it's like you see these random side shots of Neil just talking about things or exercising, and it's kind of it's kind of discordant with what we think of with Ponderosa videos, but anyway.
He gets to Ponderosa and he's like, yeah, I just got to Ponderosa. Debbie's being a huge bitch to me right now. I don't know why.
but yeah, at the end of it, he says, I think I'm going to get the chance to play again, and I don't think I'm being delusional in saying that. And maybe he is, but at least from what he was thinking at that moment, he clearly saw himself as having made this big impression on the producers, on the other castaways out there. And so, you know, working on that assumption, you can see why he would think, oh, well, clearly I could have done this and this, and everything would have gone fine for me.
Oh, I mean, I think Neil all season long has been given kind of like mastermindy confessionals, right? Like, I think he definitely is putting himself out there to become a big character and possible returnee deliberately.
Well, see, the ironic thing there is we spoke about this last week, where when someone gets medevaced, they typically don't get built up as or when they leave under these unusual circumstances, they often don't get built up in the way that you might expect someone like that too. So obviously Caleb gets this amazing treatment, but Neil, I think they... Like, if Neil genuinely was this big power player at that point, they don't want his removal from the game to seem like it was unfairly affecting the way things played out. So they kind of downplay his influence, or at least make it look like he just wasn't really a part of the show at all. And we saw this in the early episodes where he would have a confessional every now and again, and he would pop up and find the idol or do whatever. But then he would just disappear and vanish for the next few episodes. And so Neil out there, after he's just been medevaced, is thinking, well, yeah, clearly I'm going to get another chance to play because I was being built up as this big character and everyone's going to be sad to see me go. But precisely because of that, that's not going to end up being true because they don't want people to feel that way.
Right. It is. Now that you bring it, now that you put it that way, I think that's a really good point and almost makes me more optimistic about the idea of a flip where, you know, the brains end up staying safe here. Because like you're saying, I feel like they wouldn't want to present it necessarily as the case. If it was the case that the brains were about to take control and that Beauty was going to side with them and that had Neil not been so unfairly medevaced, the whole game would have played out completely differently. I think they definitely want to send the message that Aubrey was going to go home and now Neil went home, but that's okay. Things are kind of going smoothly.
Oh, so you think that they're going to present it as just a continuation of like, well, Neil would have gone and now Aubrey's going, so it's basically the same, as opposed to it ended up affecting the outcome in a meaningful way.
Right. Like, I think there is a timeline. Like, they certainly, in my opinion, could have edited this episode. It may have been blatantly dishonest, but they could have done it to make it look like the brains were about to take control and make it look like the Beauties were not even questioning siding with the brains and that one of the Bronze was definitely leaving that night. But Neil ends up getting dramatically medevaced and that changes everything. And now the rest of the season is going to be completely different than it otherwise would have been. And I feel like if they had the choice between that or it not making that much of a difference, they would choose it not making that much of a difference as far as the viewers are concerned.
So does that suggest even more strongly to you that next week we are just going to see one of the brains getting picked off and that's going to be the way things go, as opposed to, let's say, now Nick and Michelle jump over because the brains aren't as threatening and there's some new outcome that emerges there?
If anything, I would say the latter. If anything, I would say maybe we were getting a more the brains are screwed heavy edit than was realistically the case. Like, maybe they wanted to make it look clear like Nick and Michelle had made their mind up, one of the brains was leaving, and it happened to be Neil instead of Aubrey, when in fact, maybe they were more on the fence, and now, especially now that Neil's gone, maybe they're much more inclined to be flipping.
Well, in that case, doesn't it make it unfair in the other direction now, where the Brawn and the Beauty would have taken control, but now that Neil's gone, the whole dynamic shifts, and as a result, let's say Scott and Jason, who maybe would have been in charge otherwise, now get screwed over?
Yeah, it does. It makes it unfair to them, I suppose, as far as how they're going to come across looking on television, like as far as like their position in the game, I guess. But if the ultimate result of that is Neil goes at this early part of the merge, then it flips at the actual first merge vote, but come finale, we're going to be looking at Michelle and Aubrey and Debbie and Ty as our long-term players, then there's no need to present it that way right now.
Mm-hmm. The other thing about Neil having his expectations confounded, if you like, is this is all happening almost a year to the day after this actually happened out there to him in Cambodia. And so he spent all of this time consoling himself with the idea that, okay, I may have had my one shot at Survivor cut short unnecessarily, but it's not going to be my one shot because I'm going to get to come back and play again potentially. And now, based on the edit that he's received, that's looking so much less likely that the past week or so has had to be completely brutal for him.
Oh, I mean, as Max Dawson pointed out, he did not get that same, like, card at the end that said Neil is 100% recovered and hopes to play again soon. Like, he didn't get anything close to the Caleb treatment.
Right.
And,
which is complete bullshit, by the way, because I guarantee you, if they had wanted to switch it around so that Neil was the surefire returnee, they could have made him the hero and Caleb would have been just this goofy big brother contestant who nobody even has an idea why he's there. And that could have been the case. But instead, Caleb gets like the chorus of angels as he leaves, and Neil just gets taken out unceremoniously, and that's it. And you wonder what it is about Caleb that they really want him to come back and be this face of the franchise at this stage.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Is it purely because of the Big Brother thing, and now he's like a CBS darling, or do you have any theories about why that would be? Why Caleb instead of Neil?
And again, I'm not the best person to speak about this because I just don't understand it on a gut level, but I really don't know. Clearly he is entertaining to a degree. He can give good confessionals, and people out there seem to like him and respect him and want him to be there. But at the same time, it's like, well, okay, there are so many other people that's also been true of. Why are you locking this guy in for a returning player spot already when there are so many other candidates out there, as we are apparently learning now that season 34 is not too far away.
Yeah, and I mean, it also just seems like Neil, purely demographically, it is someone that can cover an area that they're typically weaker in than young alpha bro.
That's true, but also there's no shortage of mid to late 30s wannabe mastermind types.
Okay, fair. I mean, I guess the well is deep enough now with all of the archetypes that there's probably no shortage of really anything at this point. Shortage of British people. We need some more Ace from Gabon's, Dom.
We absolutely do. Although if Nikki Graham is any indication on Big Brother, I don't know how successful that's going to be.
I feel like when I was talking last season about we need to get Abby Maria in the Big Brother house, I feel like this is essentially that. So job well done.
Thank you. It's kind of great that this week's vote basically came down entirely to Nikki, and that has to be the producer's dream when you put her in there, right? Like, Nikki's just arbitrary whims end up deciding the entire course of the game for a week.
That's what I mean. Like, the twist one week or several weeks should be Nikki is the sole person voting this week. Everyone else, your only job is to try to influence Nikki.
I feel like the best twist would be if Nikki was paired with somebody else in the same way that the brothers are, like someone who presents themselves as like the hyper-rational type. Like, there should be a twist where Mitch is forced to be linked with Nikki like that for an entire week and just watch him slowly lose his mind.
I feel like even Mitch could get through that.
Yeah. What's your take on Mitch, by the way?
I love Mitch. I feel like, we obviously haven't gotten to see anything of him now that whoever is back in the house is back in the house. And that's probably going to be his biggest test to date. I'm sure it's going to be. But I feel like, honestly, from what I've seen out of Mitch so far, and just from after spending an entire summer feeling like Andy Heron was eventually going to get caught and him never getting caught, I feel like I can roll with Mitch at this point. I feel like I'm honestly probably more confident that Mitch will get out of it than will not. I feel like he's going to at least get through these next few weeks, and it's going to be a while before people are actually really fully onto him.
As a quick tangent, what do you make of this whole thing where this vote among the house guests for who gets to come back in has to be unanimous? Because it seems like somebody could just say no, and then there's no real way to resolve that situation.
I've always wondered the same thing about juries, right? I've never understood how there weren't tons of deadlocked juries. What's it called? A hung jury? Is that what that is?
Well, obviously it varies from place to place, but don't you just get a mistrial at some point? If it generally stalemates and can't be resolved, they just cancel it and start a new trial.
Right, I totally agree, but that's my point. It seems like out of a group of 12 people, and I think in a jury it's 12 people, and in the House it's like 11 people voting, it seems like way more often than seems to be the case, you would get some deadlock. But they will eventually cave. They're going to put someone back in the House, so I don't know how they're going to resolve it, but it seems like unanimous is probably a term being used loosely.
Yeah, maybe it's, we're going to present this as being a unanimous vote, when in reality it's just going to be some, like, plain majority, or just us making the decision on their behalf, or you can imagine them just, like, stepping in and putting their foot down and doing what they wanted to do anyway.
Right, I mean, like, imagine if this happens in, to use, like, an extreme example, like BB13, where two people lose their partners in a double eviction, and they just are both adamantly like, no, fuck you, I am absolutely not bending, my person will come back in.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, I guess that'll be interesting to see. Let's go back to Survivor. Dom, let's get into the merge. It's merge time, always fun. And Michelle, Dom, gets to tell us about how it's been her dream since she was a little kid to make the merge on Survivor. It apparently has also been Debbie's dream. She made it, but she never doubted she would make it, Dom. How great was that confessional, and how great is Debbie continuing to be?
And I never doubted her either. You know, I've been on the Debbie train since the beginning. Debbie is fantastic. And we saw her actual gameplay kind of unravel a bit this episode, where everybody, to a man and to a woman, was saying she is coming on way too strong and we're seeing right through her. But at the same time, I kind of like that. Like, I like that she maybe isn't self-aware enough to realize that that's what the perception is. And even if she is, I don't think she would care. Like, that's the way she plays. She understands that, and she's going to own that and just continue doing it and hoping it works. And
right.
And it's not like you want people to be adaptable, but at the same time, I like that she's kind of owning her personality almost. Like, this is the way she plays. She can't be a shrinking violet. This is what she has to do to make things work. And if it doesn't work, then Debbie's not going to win, and she's at peace with that.
Right. She's saying probably it may not, it might be right, it might be wrong, but what's not going to happen is Debbie sitting idly by and getting voted out that way.
Right. And if Debbie does get voted out or blindsided, she's not going quietly. And it's going to be the makings of a great episode if they choose to do what they should with it.
Yeah, I mean, in the era of, all the talk during Survivor 31 was answer the phone, but don't be calling anyone. I feel like that's almost the general approach to most of the more like thinking players that we see on the show is I want to typically have people approaching me and not be viewed as the one like being overly eager or whatever. Debbie here, I think, is kind of like, as we would say in poker, like playing to the table. Like if everyone at the table is playing super aggressively, you should play tight, or and vice versa. If everyone at the table is waiting for an alliance offer, like she's saying, she says, I take the offense. Pull people in because people want to be pulled in. Everyone's dangling. I'll pull them in, lock them down. It almost sounds like Donald Trump now that I'm reading this.
I can see the similarities almost. Yeah.
This is going to be the greatest alliance. We're going to build a wall between us and the bronze. Ty's going to pay for it.
I want to see Debbie at the head of the Celebrity Apprentice. We can make that happen, surely.
The Celebrity Water Apprentice or whatever she... Yeah.
But Debbie, so how do you square that with the common advice that people say of like, well, you should just try and blend in with the group, whatever the general vibe is, you should be going along with that. So if there's lots of aggressive gameplay in the group, then you should be aggressive. If everyone's being passive, then you should be passive because that's just what the vibe is. Isn't that kind of a contradiction there?
Well, I mean, I feel like it's kind of like what we were talking about earlier. I feel like the idea of wanting to be the one saying yes to the alliance rather than approaching someone is the conventional wisdom for a reason, right? But as it pertains to like Debbie in particular, I think she actually... we go on to see certainly plenty of people talking about how they don't really like Debbie. And this is the downside. Like, when you are gaming this hard, you do run the risk of getting that perception out there as soon as, the merge is probably a longer time than it probably should have taken for people to feel that way about Debbie. And that's potentially going to be an issue for her down the line. But Dom, let me ask you about Debbie. Is she already in like the Hall of Fame pantheon of historically great female characters, like up in there with like your, to me, honestly, as much as shit as I talk about her, like I love Sandra. I think Sari is in there. Like Jerry Manthe certainly was in there for a long time. What do you think? Is Debbie of that caliber yet?
I think so. And part of that is uniqueness, where we have Sandra, who is famously outspoken and people love her for that. We have Abby, who is just inimitable. She's Abby and there's no real comparing her to anybody else. But with Debbie, the comparisons with Coach, I think, are on point. And there's no shortage of like egotistical male blowhards on the show. Like we've had Coach, we've had Shane, we've had so many other people. Whereas with the women, we don't really get that as often. And so I think Debbie kind of taking that archetype and gender flipping it is a welcome addition to the show. And I would be surprised and disappointed if this is the only time we get to see Debbie play Survivor.
Oh, I don't think there's virtually any chance, unless she like goes to jail again or whatever. Whatever happened to her, I'm sorry, I don't know the facts. I shouldn't speculate. But unless there's anything like lingering
issues.
It didn't
stop at this time, so.
Yeah. No, I point being, I'm totally with you. I think, assuming she wants to, I'm guessing we will definitely see Debbie end up playing again. I'm certainly looking forward to all that she has to bring for the rest of the season and her next season. Do you feel like, now that we're on it, the idea of Debbie being like potentially a lock return if she's interested, how do you think that's potentially going to go for her based on what we've seen now? Early speculation.
I think it's impossible to say when we don't know how this is going to end yet, because right. if it ends up going better than expected, then maybe the sky's the limit in one sense, but you can easily imagine Debbie just getting voted out pretty soon because nobody likes her and she doesn't have any influence anymore. And in that case, well, it's probably not going to be any better than that.
Yeah, I mean, I can't wait. I want as much Debbie as they're willing to give me, at least as things stand right now. Maybe we'll get, like, Rupert syndrome or whatever, and she'll come back and be, you know, she'll be self-aware to the point of being obnoxious, and that would suck. But I don't see that happening with Debbie. I'm really optimistic she can, like, stay clean for us as a character, because I think it really is who she is. All right, Dom, so let's talk about people's statuses now, like, entering the merge. As I've said before, Scott really seems dead set on the Braun people sticking together. He says, as soon as I saw Jason and Sydney, I was like, oh man, we're back together. He went and carried Jason off the boat. That was a great, fun little shot of that. And Ty seems to be in pretty, you know, decently with them. They've got a thing going. And probably Ty feels handcuffed, honestly, when Scott knows about that idol. And then meanwhile, Aubrey is, you know, she was thinking about separating from Joe, but now she sees Neil and Debbie and the Brains all want a reunion. And then this, Nick and Michelle and Julia all seem somewhat on the same page, over with the beauty. So it could, go a ton of different ways here. Where do you really even want to get into how this merch started to play out?
So from the frequency and the tone of Nick's confessionals, I was thinking he's done. Like, this is his moment. They're building him up so that when he gets cut down as the inevitable merch boot, everybody will have already seen it coming if they're paying attention. And then he goes and wins immunity. And that was that kind of set alarm bells off my head, because I was thinking, like, there's no way this is going to happen, right? Like, because when it got down to Nick and someone else as the final two in the challenge, I was thinking, well, clearly Nick is just going to drop out, and it's going to be like Josh, where he comes so close to winning that immunity and then doesn't get it and ends up getting voted out in that round. But then it all changed. And so part of me started to think, like, is there some big twist that's getting set up for here? Obviously, I didn't anticipate that Neil would just randomly get medevaced at the end there. But that was so, I was so stuck on that in my mind that I'm so convinced that was going to happen that I kind of think it's just going to happen next episode anyway.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I feel like this is almost the merge part one, as far as, like, the story of how the first merge vote is going to be going. And I think you're absolutely right, where Nick was someone who I've been talking about for, like, 3 weeks as my, like, almost, like, lock merge boot. And when I saw him getting half the confessional this episode, I thought it was a done deal. As you mentioned, he goes on to win immunity, and I was ready to be, like, as wrong as I've ever been as Michelle gets voted out as the merge boot, and then I have to delete last week's podcast forever, like, individually from all of our listeners' iPods and iPhones. But, yeah, no, I think, kind of speaking to your point, yeah, I think Nick probably is being set up for when we do hit part two of the merge. That's going to be Nick's time to really come shine in the episode and then get voted out at the end as this kind of, like, as I've said before, like, obligatory merge boot. Just everything about this guy is the merge boot, right?
Yeah, I think Nick is either going to be voted out next episode as the merge boot, if you can still call it that, or he's going to be a losing finalist in the mold of someone like Albert or Sash, and I don't really see any other fate in store for him.
Yeah, that's actually something that I hadn't considered until this week on Twitter. A couple of people brought up the comparison to me of the idea of Nick and Michelle being like the new Boston Rob and Amber, and that's how she ends up getting to the end. And then someone tweeted me, I don't have it in front of me, so I'm sorry to whoever that was, a picture, like a series of pictures from like Michelle's mom's Twitter or like Instagram or something like that of Nick and Michelle together, like looking in love. So like any takes on that idea, Dom, this is the new Nick is your ultimate winner.
I don't know if that, I guess it's like borderline spoilers territory. I'm tempted to think that that's just an April Fool's joke that maybe was mistimed slightly. But if it isn't, then who knows?
I don't know. I think it would be hysterical if Michelle CBS goes on to build up as this big heroic winner, and Nick, they just completely they spend a year crafting to make an edit to make this guy look as sketchy as possible, and then at the reunion they're like, oh, and by the way, Nick and Michelle are together now, and he's gonna get some of the money. Like, I think that would be really good, but I hadn't even considered the April Fool's angle, so maybe job well done by that person.
Oh yeah, or Nick, knowing that Michelle is going to go on to win and get $1 million in a year's time, has been spending the entirety of the past year just working that angle as hard as he possibly can, just so he can get a cut of that, just so he can get his cut there.
I mean, it would confirm the every life coach is a sociopath theory.
Yes.
Yeah, so staying on Nick, let's talk about when he met up with Jason and Scott when he was talking with the Braun people, and they gave him some information. Jason shared with him that he was pretty certain that Neil had an idol, and then Scott also chimed in saying that Ty definitely has an idol that he showed him. Does this seem to you like something a little more than you'd be willing to share with some very sketchy-looking guy that you've known for a few minutes?
It would be, and I think Nick, even if you don't have a reason to believe that he's sketchy, just the way he carries himself, at least on screen, just comes across as so disingenuous that, yeah, I would be very reluctant to tell him anything more than I absolutely had to. And especially if this gets back to Ty, and Ty maybe is not the type to bear grudges or to, like, go and randomly spaz out because you did this, but I can imagine, like, anybody other than Ty would be maybe slightly aggrieved that you just randomly told Nick that he had an idol.
Yeah, the big loser here is Ty, probably, who now that Nick knows, Nick is liable to tell basically anyone. I'm sure he's probably going to end up telling Michelle if they see, you know, they seem to be close this whole time. So, yeah, I agree that this is probably too spewy for me, at least in general. Like, I just feel like, generally speaking, the element of surprise is such a big piece of playing the hidden immunity idols effectively to, like, maximize value with those. And honestly, I was also wondering, if you were Jason, would you be kind of upset that Scott hadn't immediately told you about Ty's idol? I believe that was the first Jason had heard of it. He seemed, like, pumped by it, though. He was like, oh, I was so excited to hear that Ty had an idol.
Yeah, I think maybe that part of the reaction kind of overwhelmed everything else. But I don't know. Like, clearly Scott wanted to tell him, and there's no obligation to tell him the instant that the two of them reunite. So as long as he wasn't, like, keeping it from me all this time, which he doesn't seem like he was, then I would be okay with it.
That is something Boston Rob would 100% get mad at you for, is not immediately telling him. And I feel like I think Jason fancies himself as that type of player, where, like, he wants to know everything as soon as he can.
Yeah, that might be fair. I do wonder if and when Sydney is going to find out about this.
I was wondering that too. It does seem like if this gets back to her through Nick instead of through Scott and Jason, maybe that's, like, what causes the drama that we see in the, you know, the preview, where she seems ready to at least potentially split or entertain the idea of splitting from the Braun. Like, if she does find out about that, like, third or fourth hand, when it was her theoretically closest allies who were the one knowing the information and having the idols, that's got to definitely sting a bit.
Yeah, we already see them trying to play out this fabled women's alliance, which is always kind of looming over us. I don't think it's any more likely to materialize here than it was any of the past 7 times that they played that up. But certainly if Sydney, because Sydney, I think, wants to be loyal to her team, and if Scott and Jason do remain solid, then that's what she's going to go with. But at the same time, she's not going to stay on a sinking ship, and if she has some reason to think that the two of them are off doing their own thing, well, she is more than capable of branching off herself and making something happen.
So, yeah, I guess, Dom, let's have the Aubrey talk now, finally. She, as mentioned, had a very big episode this week, and as the brains were scrambling, she was the one saying, you know, you have to show confidence, and right now we're showing desperation. And then Neil tells Aubrey about his idol, and she gets some inspirational content about that and getting the whole brains group in gear and getting herself in gear. And then at the end of the episode, after Neil leaves, she gets the big heroic Oregon Trail confessional. So what was your big takeaway from Aubrey this episode? Because I know she is definitely getting on a lot of people's winner radars after this week.
Yeah, so a massive episode for Aubrey, and the thing is, I don't know what end this is building towards, because I see a lot of people talk about her as a winner, and I would like that to be the case, and there is some kind of Sophie Clark upside there, maybe, although Aubrey at the moment is getting much more positive content, and just much more content in general than Sophie ever did, so...
Yeah, I was going to say, she's getting the winner edit Sophie never got.
Right, like, I think people kind of identify Aubrey with Sophie, and I see where they're coming from, but I think the two of them have very different personalities, even though Aubrey kind of drew that link herself, and also the way they're being presented to the audience is very different, where I think they almost tried to hide Sophie so that the audience wouldn't dislike her, which you can debate how much that is insulting to both Sophie and the audience's intelligence, but I think with Aubrey they're really pushing her front and center at this stage, and the question is, why is that? Because I don't think Aubrey fits that natural mold or stereotype of the underdog, of the heroine, as CBS likes to portray. And it tends to be fairly simplistic when they do that. There's not much room for nuance there. So the fact that they are doing it with Aubrey is kind of confusing to me. Maybe they're just doing the best with what they have, where they think, well, let's say Jason takes control now and is running this majority alliance for most of the season, Jason by himself is not the easiest guy to root for, so maybe you do need someone on the other side that you can build up as this foil to him, almost. I don't know. What's your take on the whole situation?
I mean, my take as things stand right now is they are doing exactly what I've always wanted them to do with Aubrey, which is building up another compelling potential winner candidate, even someone who's not going to end up winning, recognizing that when they end up losing, the audience is going to be a little upset by that, but at least we will have spent a long time liking them in the first place and feeling like this could have gone a number of different ways. I still feel like Michelle is the one that I definitely have my eye on as far as the winner. I do understand why, after such a big week, people would be thinking that Aubrey got some great winner stuff. There was certainly plenty that I could see at that finale montage potentially being in there. At the same time, it yet again feels like everything from Michelle, not everything, but plenty from Michelle could have been left on the editing room floor and was kind of shoehorned in, whereas essentially all of what Aubrey got was pertinent to the things that were actually happening within the story of that episode.
Yeah, and believe me, I would desperately like to convince myself that it is going to be Aubrey and not Michelle, but I think the case for Michelle is so overwhelming at this point that I just can't bring myself to do it. One question that kind of leads on from that, though, is what more does Aubrey have to do, if anything, to book her second time playing? Like, do you think she's already in the mix there?
I think she's already in the mix for sure. Just because of being like a younger girl that isn't the typical younger girl that they end up casting. And she is, you know, certainly coming across, maybe this is just recency bias because of this week, but she has been a big enough character this season, I would say, to definitely be on people's radar to the point that she could definitely end up coming back. What do you think?
Yeah, I think they're putting in enough effort with Aubrey to build up her edit that I think there has to be some kind of payoff there. And if it's not this season, then it's going to be because they think she has the potential to come back and deliver the same kind of stuff again. Because I think that Aubrey's confessionals in general are very engaging. And obviously that fantastic monologue at the end there is just an entire winner's montage by itself, basically. Mm-hmm. But she's clearly not the same kind of character as like a Parvati or, you know, there are lots of male character equivalents as well, where it's like they very easily fit the mold of what CBS wants to paint them as, whereas Aubrey is just kind of being herself and doing her thing, and it's relatable, but I don't know if it's good TV by a conventional definition.
Well, I think it's good to have someone who is different. I think just on the surface, who stands out as a different character that different types of people can just inherently root for.
Well, see, the weird thing is with that, though, is pre-show, all of us were assuming that Aubrey was going to be like this kind of kooky, quirky, you know, super fan who would end up maybe not fitting in or whatever. But instead, she's just turned into like this like ice cold, ruthless player who sometimes does show this softer side of herself. So it's
even better, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very she is showing a more complex personality than the show allows most people to give.
Yeah, I mean, let me be really, really clear that like, while I wouldn't have Aubrey as my winner pick right now, I think she's certainly number two. And beyond whether she's going to win or not, I really, really am liking Aubrey. And like, she's fun on Twitter. I think she's great on the episodes. And to go back to like the idea of her playing again, she's someone I would definitely love to see back.
Yeah. And if Aubrey does go on to win, I won't be floored at all. It won't be a case of like, how on earth did that happen? As you can imagine with some people. Whereas with Michelle, if Michelle doesn't win, it will go against all of the theories I've been building up about it. But at the same time, I could understand how her edit did not end up being a winner's edit, if that makes sense.
Okay, well, let's transition into that. Because if it were not for Michelle, I would definitely think Aubrey was the clear frontrunner. Like, if we were seeing, like, 30% less Michelle, I think that may still even be the case. But as far as why Michelle would maybe be getting the edit that she's getting if she is not the winner, the only theory that I have seen that I have really bought into so far is one that Ashley's Dream Board, the great Ashley's Dream Board on Twitter, tweeted to us earlier today, which is, now that Neil's idol is gone, if that gets rehidden and Michelle finds it and does something Kelly Wentworth-esque with that, maybe that could be a reason why they would build her up. That I could definitely get on board with and see. But I feel like if anyone else finds that idol, it is essentially signing Michelle's check for $1 million.
I think it's possible. I don't know if they would put so much work into building up Michelle if it was just for one episode's worth of payoff. And maybe they are trying to force her into that kind of role where she's going to be this this constant presence throughout the season, and we're supposed to like really end up rooting for her by the end. But I'm just not seeing it. I think this is a case of she goes on to win, and so they work backwards to find some way to make that win look better than it seemed on paper at the time.
Right. I mean, to go back to what you were saying about Aubrey, like, I would get it if Aubrey ended up winning. I would understand probably, like, why people would want to vote for her and why they would portray her the way that they're portraying her. But as things stand right now, just because of the sheer, like, how much I believe in Michelle's edit at this point, I would be floored if Aubrey ended up winning. I think I really still feel like it's got to be Michelle. And maybe, I guess, the other possibility, along with the new idol, is the third medevac. I guess that's a possibility, but I still don't feel like they would build her up this much if she was the third medevac. And by the way, Dom, I did a poll on Twitter earlier today, and I asked, essentially, do you have Michelle or the field gun to your head right now as the winner? At this hour, only the low 40s, like 41% of people have Michelle, which means 59% of people have the field. And now that I'm thinking about it, it seems like out of that 59% of people that have the field, it seems like almost all of them must have Aubrey specifically, right?
There's got to be that one person who still has their flag hitched to the Julia mast. But beyond that, I think, yeah, the vast majority have to be on Aubrey. I don't know who else would even... I guess, like, Ty, maybe. But I think Ty is so clearly, like, the underdog that doesn't make it there, as opposed to the winner, that yeah. I'm not sure who else would even be a candidate.
Yeah, I mean... If, you know, so 41% on Michelle, even if I'm generous in saying that, you know, 75% of the people are on Aubrey out of the other 58%, that's still more people than are on Michelle. That's, it's possible. I guess my larger point is that more people after this episode now think Aubrey are going to win, at least out of the people that follow me on Twitter, which is a tremendous sample size, are thinking Aubrey is going to win more so than Michelle, which to me at this point, I would definitely think is crazy. Okay, so let's move on to Dr. Rupert's Day of Judgment. And Dom, prior to the immunity challenge, we checked in with a bunch of people about their injuries. And now, before tribal council, Jeff comes in on a motorboat, and it seems pretty clear that someone is probably going to get pulled if it's happening. It seems like typically they would want to go to the tribal council and then say, hey, Neil, stay behind. We'll have medical take a look at you. Or maybe in this case, because they'd already lost someone, they're like, we want to get this out. We don't want to lose someone at a vote and then have to pull someone. Do you think maybe that came into play?
From whose perspective?
From production's perspective, like, we've already lost Caleb and now our schedule's already a little bit early. If we go to a vote and then lose someone there who is not one of the people that is, you know, injured, and then we have medical look at them after the vote, and one of them then has to leave again. We've now lost two people tonight instead of just the one if we pull someone ahead of time.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I think it has to weigh on them on some level, because one medevac is already going to disrupt the schedule to some degree. Two medevacs, I imagine, does weird things to it, where now things like actively have to be pushed back or taken forward, or you have to do things to keep it on track still, and it's not clear to me how they're going to do that. So, yeah, maybe they just had to make this on-the-spot decision of, like, it looks like Neil's going to get taken out or someone's going to get taken out, so we may as well do it now if that has to happen.
Yeah, I mean, we saw Kathy and Penner leave in Micronesia, and that ended up going from a final three to a final two, and I guess we should probably get to this now. I think we're both on the same page. I'm thinking this is going to be a final two at this point.
I would go further and say I don't see how it can be a final three.
Yeah, I mean, if we're getting three people medevaced, it seems like, I guess this medevac came at a time where we would have voted someone out, so it doesn't throw the schedule off. But still, I feel like we've already lost Caleb. We're going to lose someone else. I would be probably pretty surprised at this point if it's a final three.
Yeah, and I know there's been some speculation of, well, everybody's saying Michelle's the winner. How is that actually going to play out in reality? Like, who is she going to beat in the finals? Keep in mind, if it's the final two, she only has to beat one person. And unless she is literally the most disliked person on the island, which I don't think is true by any means, then she has outs, and she can realize those outs if she's able to recognize that and pursue it. And we see later on in the episode, Michelle saying, Jason has pissed enough people off that I don't think they would vote for him. I don't think anybody would be surprised if Michelle and Jason were the final two and Michelle ended up being victorious there.
Yeah, I said after the season premiere that I thought Jason was a losing finalist. At the time, meaning one of two losing finalists, I still think it makes sense if he is the only losing finalist. And yeah, when Michelle had that quote about he's pissed enough people off that I don't think they'd vote for him, not only did she say that, it was subtitled. Like, and yes, as I've talked about in previous episodes, I think subtitles are, we really need to be paying more attention to subtitles than people, I think, tend to recognize. But yeah, I think that's a very possible situation, is Michelle over Jason. Or Michelle, you know, as we talked about earlier, Michelle over Nick. A larger point is, Michelle doesn't have to be Kim Spradlin to be beating a lot of the people in this cast in a final situation.
Right.
All right, so going back, Dr. Rupert is in, apparently Dr. Joe has been medevaced too. Ty is the first one. I thought Rob Cesternino put it really well, where he said, it's kind of like Russian roulette here. Like, all right, Ty, you're up first, and then Scott, you're next. They both get cleared. Aubrey gets antibiotics, but gets to stay in the game. Some people were upset about this on Twitter, apparently, Dom, about, hey, this isn't Survivor. You know, what are these antibiotics about? I am always of the opinion, at least as things are right now, please, God, make it easier on these contestants. Give them whatever they need to make it so that they can play an interesting game, because that is the star of the show at this point. What did you think about this? Do you have any problem with Aubrey being on antibiotics?
Those people are wrong. Like, if you're going to have a problem with anything in this scenario, have a problem with, firstly, the production decision to hold this season in a location where they have a decent idea that this could happen and is going to happen, and it's apparently going to happen to at least one more person in this season going forward. And also, we know that both Peter and Liz essentially had to be medevaced from Ponderosa because of these infections that had been developing on them as a result of their time spent on the Brains Beach. And we see Neil get taken out now. So that's three people who essentially were removed from the game from medical reasons, just at different stages. And you can imagine, let's say Peter and Liz had been in control on that tribe. What if the two of them had to be taken out as well? And now you have potentially an entire tribe of people getting taken out because that one location, for whatever reason, was harboring some kind of thing that has led to so many medevacs. And Aubrey, I think, unless, you know, maybe she's going to be the lucky one to escape, and maybe the antibiotics are going to help with that, but she could be the latest person in that line. And I did have the kind of disturbing thought of, what if she is the final medevac and it just comes so late in the season that it's essentially a tribute edit at that point?
Right, maybe she is the person. In your theory about the person production was thinking was going to win, gets medevaced late in the game and kind of gets it taken away from them, maybe she's that person.
Right. And if that's the case, it would be so brutal and in every possible sense of the word if, like, Peter, Liz, Neil, and Aubrey, all having started on the same tribe, all fell victim to a similar thing. Like, at that point, production has serious questions that they have to answer, I think. And I think they do already, but in that case, it would be even worse.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost... you know, I always frame things as, like, now that we're 32 seasons into it, fill in the blank. But now that we're 32 seasons into it, it's almost kind of a miracle at this point, right? I think we've had hundreds of over 100 tribes at this point, we haven't had a situation where, like, an entire tribe's water supply gets contaminated or whatever, and they all get sick and get pulled.
Well, part of that is, supposedly, the water supply often is literally supplied for them, as in it is treated beforehand to make sure that it doesn't contain parasites or anything too extreme. And so that's why, going back to that debate earlier in the season about whether you need to boil the water or whatever, there have been multiple people from multiple seasons saying you actually don't need to do that and you should be fine. But obviously they don't want to really reveal that on the air.
Okay, I've had that question when the water debate continues to come up, because I remember years ago, at this point, the AMA with the Survivor cameraman on Reddit, where I am almost positive he or she said, the water's totally fine. It's bottled water, essentially. You don't have to do anything to it. But we still constantly see people talking about how you need to drink the water. Or you need to boil, excuse me. You can't drink the water. You need to boil it.
Right. And the thing is, like, there's so much danger to be had in stuff that is waterborne, essentially, that I don't think they could afford to take that risk. Right, like I'm not a medical expert or anything, but it strikes me that if you had that situation where one tribe's entire water supply just went down, that's the end of the season right there, potentially. And you can't, so you can say whatever you want about the integrity of the show or the concept being tarnished by you doing that, but I don't think that you have any other option, basically.
Maybe it's the situation where it is regular bottled water, but there's always a chance, guys, that there is some kind of virus in there, and so you should be boiling. Like, you almost essentially have to be boiling it, and that's why they're so adamant about boiling it.
I mean, it's still a well. Like, things still get in there. Like, they can't control for everything. But yeah, I don't think they can afford to let that risk be any more than it absolutely has to be.
Right, but isn't I mean, the point of boiling water is that you kill any of the bacteria.
Right, but I'm saying in the event that people don't do that, or they don't do it thoroughly enough, or whatever, you can't let those situations come up. But anyway, I think regardless of what you think about that, I've seen lots of people saying that this season is one of their favorites, so they like the cast, they like what's going on. I've seen nobody saying, I like the season because of how tough the conditions are, because so many people are getting injured and taken out of the game, and because they spend so much time on close-ups of Neil having this, like, black thing on his back that's just, like, eating him away from the inside. Like, who is tuning into the show because of this? Like, who is getting anything positive out of watching that?
I mean, way, way, way back when Survivor first started, before like the first episode even aired, they did not correct people who were thinking that the idea of the show is people might literally die out there. But I think, again, 32 seasons later, I think that's no longer the point at all. We are all aware of what this show is. We know what makes for good Survivor seasons in general. And like you're saying, it is not crazy conditions and people getting medevaced. I'm with you. I don't think there is virtually any part of the fan base who's out there saying, oh, more of this, please.
Well, if you take the Facebook fan page as your barometer, which is always a risky move, I will admit, then the pendulum seems to have swung from... Oh, Survivor is too easy now. Everybody has it so great. They should make it harder on the contestants. All the way over to, this is disgusting. Why are you showing us this? Why are you treating them so badly? Like, and at that point, you have taken it too far. If the Survivor Facebook fan page is beating you up over that, then they might actually have a point this time.
We finally found a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess let's get into it, where Neil now is the last one to get checked out by the doctors, and his knee is exploding, and his back, he's apparently been infected by grayscale. I don't know how they got it out there in Cambodia. He ends up getting pulled here, and importantly, he gets pulled with the idol in his pocket. And what do we know about why he ended up doing that?
So in his exit interviews, he's been saying that shortly before that happened, Aubrey had, I don't know if he meant said it explicitly to him or he just kind of found it out through the grapevine, but he became aware that Aubrey was willing and planning to cut him loose if the need arose. And he obviously understood on some level why that had to be the case. But when he had just been taken out of the game, deprived of his one chance at getting to play still, he's not really in the mind to say, oh, well, I'm going to give my idol to the person who made it very clear that they were willing to betray me. And I believe he also said, if he could go back and do things differently, he would have given her the idol, which maybe is suggests on some level that she doesn't do well, but we will try to pretend that wasn't the case.
Well, I mean, it also maybe suggests that she doesn't get medevaced. Like, what difference would it make if she got medevaced?
True, yeah.
I definitely had the same thought where he said, yeah, I'd probably do it differently now. Okay, I could game Aubrey.
But even in that case... It could still be that she falls victim to the same fate as Peter and Liz, where after she gets voted out and goes to the jury, she then has to get medical attention still because of this thing that's developing on her leg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe that remains to be seen. It just doesn't feel to me like Aubrey's going to get pulled for whatever reason, for some unknown reason.
Yeah, me too. But the fact that it's even in question, that the fourth person from that tribe is going to have to receive external attention from outside the game, it's baffling to me that they would even think that's a good idea and allow it to develop to that stage.
Right.
It's just absurd. Like, to me, the moment you see the first sign of this, you put them all on antibiotics, even if they don't want to be, and you insist that they take all of these preventative measures to stop it from happening.
Yeah, and consider that Debbie also got checked out at that challenge. So Joe, the 71-year-old, is the only one who has not been looked at by medical. Yeah.
How insane is that, by the way? That, like, I don't know if Joe just has like this iron constitution or something, but it's kind of impressive almost.
Or is it the least surprising thing ever, Dom? Look at him. He's 71 years old and he still looks like that. That guy does not crack.
I guess there's like some Bayesian argument where if Joe was a type to be susceptible to that kind of thing, he probably would be dead already. So like the fact that he's still alive is proof that he's made of tougher stuff than that.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into Neil. I mean, we can't really obviously, I think if the doctor says this is serious enough to pull him, he should certainly go. I'm totally on board. They shouldn't let the players decide, hey, I'll take the risk. I don't know if we've ever even talked about that. Do you feel like it should be allowed? The players should be able to sign away and say, I want to keep going?
I imagine there are strong legal reasons why they can't do that, even if they wanted to. Like, the show has some kind of liability if something bad happens.
I guess maybe, like, the Hippocratic Oath alone is enough to say you're coming out.
Well, yeah, that too. But everyone's always going to say that. I think in Neil's case, it's the kind of thing where his present situation was not bad enough where he would have to be pulled from the game. Like, it's not physically stopping him from doing anything. He still feels in relatively good spirits. But the moment it crosses that line and becomes too bad, that's it. And there's basically no going back from that. And you really have to hope against hope that it's not going to become even worse and just devour the entire leg.
Right. I mean, to use a bad example that I'm sure has no basis in medical reality, maybe Caleb's heart rate and blood whatever would have dropped and he could have been fine like the next day. But if you run that risk, you're also running the risk of his heart like failing.
But that seems like just a problem with the show at a fundamental level, right? Where you have all of these minor medical things where each one of them individually probably won't develop into anything bad. But the one that does, and there probably will be one that does, has the potential to just overwhelm literally everything else that's going on.
Yeah, well, I think the good news, I really, really am hoping and I'm optimistic that the good news is I think they are going to be a lot more cautious going ahead. I think they do not want another season anything close to like this. So I'm really hoping that, you know, as we see seasons 33 and 34, we can avoid medevacs entirely for as long as possible. I mean, it's crazy to think about, like, we had Scoop and Falling in the Fire, and then I think the next medevac after that was Bruce, like 5 years later, and then it took a while again, and then out of nowhere we started getting tons of medevacs, like almost a medevac every season for like we probably had double digit medevacs in the last 10 seasons, right? Where I don't know what happened or what changed, but I think they probably are hopefully after this season going to be on a course to start correcting that.
Yeah, like if you want to rebut the people who say that the show is getting easier, just point them to the graph of the medevacs over time and how frequent they've been getting in recent seasons. And the fact that people are still voluntarily signing up to put themselves through that experience is a testament to how well the show resonates with people on some fundamental level.
Do you think that graph already exists at True Dork Time? Because I think there's a very solid chance it does.
I think the moment that you ask the question of whether they exist, it just magically comes into existence, regardless of whether Jeff is sleeping at this very moment. Or just, it will be there. Like it's like Schrodinger's graph. The moment you start talking about it, it starts to take shape.
Sure. All right. I don't know what that means at all. I've never really fully understood the Schrodinger's cat thing. I'm going to be fully honest. It's been a while since I've studied quantum physics, so.
Yeah, not sure this is the right form to be unraveling the mysteries of quantum physics, but in any case, there was a lot of upset people online that Neil didn't give his idol to Aubrey, and to me, like, I can understand why she would be upset about it. I don't see why random people on the internet are getting upset about it, and to me, if Neil wants that souvenir or he just doesn't want to do it for his own reasons, then, fine, do what you want.
Well, I mean, people like Aubrey, that's why. If you're wondering why, Dom.
Well, and that's fine, but you don't need to think that becomes like an obligation for him to give the idol to her. And if you're going to, in his like darkest moment of suffering out there on the show, be harping on him, oh, why didn't you give the idol to Aubrey? Then maybe your priorities are misplaced slightly.
Well, I mean, I do think it's not an entirely unfair question when there's nothing, he doesn't need the idol anymore. Like, I don't think it's an unnatural question to ask, why not give it to her?
Right, but you can say, oh, why not give the idol to Aubrey, as opposed to, why didn't you give the idol to Aubrey, you scumbag? Like,
that's okay,
those are
that's
two fair. Very different questions.
I agree. Okay, that's definitely true. I guess let's give some parting thoughts on Neil. I mean, maybe part of why he was not totally heartbroken about leaving, like he seemed to, he was like, I love this game, and he seemed to be crying a bit, but maybe why he seemed like somewhat cool about it is he did seem to think that he was going to get another chance. And maybe he thinks the medevac is like, hey, this is a great way. It's unfinished business. It's even more reason to bring me back.
Yeah, I don't know if his vision of himself aligns with how production or the audience really sees him. Maybe the truth is somewhere in the middle. But I mean, I never really bought into the hype around Neil, but I can kind of see why people did. And it's sad. I mean, it would be sad for anybody, but for him in particular, who really loved the show and really invested so much in being on the show emotionally, like, for him to be taken out like that is just so... It's just such a bad outcome. And like, as I said before, nobody's happy about it. Like, who is out there thinking, oh, wow, this was a really great dramatic twist, and I'm really glad that had to happen to somebody. Like, it's just so unnecessary. And they're taking what could have been a perfectly good season, or by some people's standards, an excellent season, and sabotaging it almost, because this could have been a decent mode episode where, you know, going into the end, there's this question of, will Neil use his idol? Will he use it on the right person? Will Michelle and Nick go with the Brawn people or flip over to the Brains? Is anything else going to happen? You know, and all of these questions could have been answered in one moment, and instead it's just, well, Neil's gone, and that's that. And that's it. That's your merge episode. That's the biggest focal point of the season up until this stage.
No, totally on board. It's like 4-4-3 numbers are honestly like, the conditions are perfect for a great merge episode, especially with three idols out there, Debbie doing God knows what, Jason and Scott trying to pull people in, Nick and Michelle being the swing votes. Like, everything was perfectly set up here for like a really fun and interesting vote. And maybe I still think going into next week, we could definitely still see a lot of excitement, but you're totally right. Like, this is how deflating can a merge episode be, where like, when we have all of these amazing conditions for it to end like that, especially for someone like Neil, who, as you were saying, really big fan of the game. I would actually personally be fine with seeing Neil come back, but I'm totally with you. Like, this definitely sucks as a way to end the merge episode. Yeah, while we're on Neil coming back, I guess potentially, is he someone, I know you're not like buying the Neil hype to the same extent as some other people. Do you think he could potentially like win a random season of Survivor, though? Is he someone that you think is typically capable?
I honestly don't think we've seen enough to say.
Okay, that's a fair answer. I mean, from what I've seen of Neil, he definitely seems totally smart enough, and I don't think people, you know, from what we saw, it doesn't seem like people, like, disliked Neil all that much. I definitely think Neil could have a lot of potential as a Survivor player, but I'm with you. I think it's probably pretty early for judgment at this point, especially when they have to paint him as someone who got medevaced, and we're probably pretty careful about what they showed.
Yeah, I don't see any obvious reason why he couldn't, but then I was saying that about Ramsey last week, and look where that got me. So who knows, really?
A lot of people are wondering who the hell Ramsey is right now.
And if you don't know, then you're probably lucky that you don't. So don't bother availing yourself of that information.
Ramsey is an adult who uses the word boink to mean have sex with in earnest. Yeah. All right. Any other go ahead, sorry.
Well, yeah, so there was a point where, like, Ramsey was speculating that he and Maddie were the best showmates in the history of Big Brother, and it's like, you're not even Maddie's best showmates in the past week. I don't know where you're kind of extrapolating all of this from.
Actually, showmancing really does seem to be the key to victory in Big Brother Canada, right? I guess John and Netta weren't technically a showmance at the time.
I guess. Maybe Maddie's logic is, if you just have a showmance with literally everybody, then then that principle has to work, and it has to work for you. It's almost like she's solved the game in a weird way.
Yeah, we'll see how that plays out. Taryn is divined that Maddie is going to be the next HOH, so even though the feeds have been down. So that could be a lot of fun.
I really hope so.
Yeah. All right. Any other thoughts on Neil?
Not really. I mean, he seemed like a really nice guy, and I know that people who we know have all kind of testified that he's great in real life, and I imagine he's going to be a fixture of the Survivor community for a long time to come. But in terms of his presence on the show, I don't think there's much more to say, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, Neil is someone that I will not be surprised if he's in whatever the returnee mix is for season 34. I won't be upset if he's back out there on season 34. The more that I think about it, though, the more that I do feel like we may see, probably not to the same extent as like Vetus, to use an extreme example, but I think we could see a shadier side of Neil potentially if he were back out there. But I don't know. Maybe I think it's also possible that Neil, you know, Neil could be a much higher upside player than maybe we realize right now. So unfortunate to see Neil go out this way, but what can you do, Dom? I think let's start looking ahead now at where we go from here. Now that Neil is gone and that idol is gone with him, I guess first of all, do you think that idol is going to go back in?
I have to think so, right? Like if you're trying to build up this twist of what happens if two idols come together, then you don't want that to be only two idols in play, because that leaves so many fewer permutations of what could happen. And if you put that idol back in, let's say, I don't know, Nick finds it, or Jason finds another one, or Joe finds it. Like, depending on who finds it, there are so many different avenues that get opened up that I think you just have to put it back in and see what happens there.
Yeah, I mean, I think you do. I agree that you probably have to put it back in at this point. Like, if you're production, I would be floored if they don't put it back in with this many people left. Yeah, so Dom, one person that we haven't talked too much about, despite the fact that she, along with Nick and Michelle, was a swing vote this week, and we heard literally nothing from her, is Julia. First of all, the major takeaway for me is Julia is done. The 1% I thought, I said she might even be my second overall pick. I think she's off the table at this point. I think we would have seen something from Julia if she were to go on to win in this merge episode. But that being said, I still think she could be an interesting player going ahead. What are you thinking about Julia right now?
Yeah, it's a shame because based on her secret scene, she's more articulate and more perceptive than you would have reason to think based on the show. And I think if she were to be a bigger part of the episodes going forward, I would very much like that. I don't know if that's going to be likely, though, because it does seem like she only pops up when she needs to. And so she has like one great episode and then she disappears. And then she has another great episode and then she disappears. And I think unless Julia is involved in some big reshuffle in the game in some way, then we're not going to hear much more from her until that happens.
I could see Julia being the Sierra Dawn Thomas figure of this season, the first person, take your pick of people, the first one out in a five-person finale potentially, or maybe even a four-person finale if this is a final two, where we just don't hear that much from them. They're not the person who came that close. They probably wouldn't have necessarily even won if they had gotten there, although plenty of them actually probably would. But I feel like Julia at this point is just kind of on the sideline until she's absolutely necessary, which is unfortunate because, like you're saying, based on what we've seen from Julia in secret scenes and from what little we've seen from her on the show, I really like Julia and would have a lot of reason to believe in her if we were getting a lot more of her.
Yeah, and I wonder, given that we aren't seeing much of her, and we also don't see Michelle really talk about her or interact with her in any way, I wonder what the status of the two of them is now, because I wonder if Anna was the bridge between the two of them, and now that she's gone, and the two of them were stuck on different tribes, there's no reason for them to come together again, and it's only because, well, we used to know each other at one point, and we both need an ally, so why not?
Yeah, I mean, Beauty really does seem to be finding themselves in the middle here, which I didn't anticipate at all. Do you think that that's going to be something that we continue to see going forward, or might it be the case now, like we talked about earlier, that now that Neil is gone, they've essentially voted out of Brain and now things change?
Maybe. It's 'cause one thing I could see happening, and if it does end up being the case that Nick is voted out next episode, one way I can imagine that happening is if Michelle and Julia kind of reconnect. They stick with the Brawns, but they think, well, now that the Brains have lost one of their front men and also the idol, we don't need to worry about them in the short term. Why don't we take a shot at Nick while we still can and then regroup moving forward? And I think Julia kind of being part of that is going to be pretty important.
Yeah, I think that would actually be a brilliant move as well, because I think a continuing thing that's going to remain important is not wanting to be perceived as too big of a threat, like your group being perceived as like, oh, we definitely need to chop one of them down now. So if you are proactive in saying, no, we're not with Nick, we want to get him out now, plus then you're reducing it down to only three total beauties left in the game, drastically reducing the target on that group as like just something that other people can paint as a target down the line. I would actually really, really like that move if we do see Michelle and Julia really go in here trying to sell out Nick. And I think Ty would definitely be fine with that. Ty seems to be totally in with the Bronze.
Yeah, and he kind of has to be, right? Like, he has tied himself to Scott and then by extension to Jason. And even if he does want to work with, I guess the only other option would be Michelle, then what is he going to do? Is he going to turn his back on Scott? Like, that wouldn't even make sense at this point.
Right. I mean, like we were saying last week, it seems like Ty, well, I do think, like, he had a confessional talking about he likes Scott. Scott is nice and logical and a good player and a good ally. Like, I do think Ty actively enjoys being in an alliance with him. But, as we were talking about last week, I feel like Ty also at a certain point may feel like he's handcuffed to working with Scott when Scott is the one that he told about his idol and Scott now is telling other people about the idol. It seems like Ty may feel like he has no real choice but to stay loyal to Scott.
Right.
Yeah, so that'll definitely be interesting to track. Where do you think the Bronze are going to go if they even remain like the Bronze? Because, again, we saw in the preview that maybe Sydney wants to branch off from that. Although maybe it's another case, as they say, what happens in next time on Survivor stays in next time on Survivor.
Yeah, I think at least for now, the three of them are going to be pretty tight. And I guess, like, maybe, I was going to say maybe they try to team up with the brains in some weird scenario, but I don't even know why that would happen.
I mean,
I guess...
If I'm Sydney, and I feel like people are hating Scott and Jason and feeling like they're too big of a threat, and framing it in terms of the Bronze are too big of a threat, I may want to make it clear, yo, I'm not part of them. I'm not with that. Like, it may, just because we came from the same tribe, like, I'm happy to break off from that. If, you know, if I'm Sydney and people are starting to potentially lump me in with that in a negative way.
Sure.
So that I could see coming into play potentially down the line. But I, for right now, I think I'm probably with you that it looks like plan A is probably going to be stick together. It looks like Scott, at least, definitely wants to stick together. He had a quote talking about the brains are screwed. We're just going to pick them off one by one. And Nick actually had a quote in this episode talking about wanting to stay with Scott and Jason because they're all, quote, always going to feel overconfident. And when everyone feels safe is when you do your damage. It may not be Nick who's the one there to inflict the damage if we are right that he's the next one out. But I could definitely see people liking the idea of leaving Scott and Jason in to, like, get overconfident and pose, you know, paint up as threats down the line.
And they do seem like the type who would do that as well, especially Jason. And I know there was some speculation of now that Scott is back with Jason, maybe he's going to slip back into his old habits and get overconfident again. And I think we kind of saw the seeds of that this episode, where after he is left out, where after he's left in the dark on the Peter slash Julia vote, he kind of overreacts in a big way. And then when he gets back together with Jason, we already see people saying, oh, the two of them think they have the game won already, and they're already getting overconfident. So, yeah, I think that could be in the cards, where the kind of lovable Scott that we've come to get adjusted to now falls back into the background, and we see the kind of old, more aggressive Scott that we saw at the start.
Right, especially when he has the confessional in there about how, yeah, we're going to ride this to the final seven, and then we're saying we're going to see how it goes from there, but me and Jason already know how it's going from there. Ha 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 ha! Like that kind of thing. I think we could definitely see Scott potentially get blind, you know, be a little optimistic about his own, about how things are going for him. Yeah,
yeah. It was the Tommy Wiseau laugh at the end that really.
That's really funny. All right, we really do need to do a podcast about The Room someday.
We absolutely do, and that film is timeless, so whenever we do it, it's going to be relevant, but it's just about finding the right moment for it.
I mean, I really, years ago, before his second time playing, we were hoping to do it with Cochran, who is also a big The Room fan. At this point, I would rather do a podcast about The Room than do another retrospective with him. I'm not saying, I'm doing it with him, I meant to be clear.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if either of those things is going to happen, though. All right.
Maybe that's the angle we should work. Like, maybe he would rather talk about anything but Survivor at this point.
Actually, that's not a bad call. Maybe we should do that. All right.
No harm in trying, I guess.
Yeah, all right. Okay, Dom, who else do you have here? Anyone else you want to be getting into at this point? I guess, at least for me, the resounding takeaway entering next episode, all I hope for is that whatever happens benefits Debbie and she can stay on my television as long as possible.
Yeah, Debbie and Aubrey, and I'll lump Joe in there as well, even though I don't really care. I would love it if it went against Nick somehow, although, and I think that is going to happen, but I don't really know how. I guess maybe if he's seen as trying to play both sides, and they think, well, we have the brains where we want them, we can just pick them off whenever we want, whereas Nick seems to be good in challenges, and we don't really know where his head's at, and maybe he's going to be looking for the idol aggressively, so let's just axe him now and be done with it.
I mean, I really like your idea of potentially Michelle and Julia being on board with it and recognize, like, if we do see Michelle say, I'd love to take Nick out for whatever, you know, any of the reasons that I gave or any of her own reasons, that would really impress me and I would start to feel a lot better about Michelle as the impending winner of this season.
See, I wonder if that would actually be quite a bad move for Michelle, though, because Nick seems like the type who would take Michelle to the end thinking he could beat her when in reality she would beat him. And that's a perfect kind of ally to have, especially one who can also win challenges for you towards the end and stop other people from winning them at the wrong time and ruining your plan.
Yeah, I mean, especially if once Nick is gone, she's going to be viewed as, like, potentially ringleading Julia around and just having an extra vote in Julia. That may not be where she wants to be, so maybe you're totally right. But I do feel like still, maybe not right now, but sometime soon, before, like, Final Nine or so, I think they got to take a swing at Nick. They do not want four. Maybe it's not so bad when Ty is blatantly with the Bronze now, but I would still be, larger point, interested in reducing the number of people that I'm perceived as being super solid with.
Yeah, Michelle doesn't need to be carried, bro, but I think it would actually benefit her to be carried. Let Nick drag her to the end as he sees it, thinking he can beat her, and then turn the tables on him at that point. You don't need to do it right now.
Yeah, no, I definitely don't disagree with that at all. I would be concerned that me and Nick would be potentially viewed as like a power duo, even incorrectly. That would just be my concern. But I think you are absolutely right that, yeah, Nick, for all the reasons you gave, like, he definitely does seem like someone who would be a high-risk candidate to incorrectly take Michelle to the end.
Yeah.
All right. So, Dom, I guess that's probably going to do it for this week. Anything else you wanted to get to?
I think that's fine. Apologies if I sound kind of bored or croaky tonight. It's as Colin said, it's something like 6:30 in the morning over here. I'm not even sure myself. But I promise to be back on top form next week if I'm still here.
If you're still alive. All right, if you haven't been medevaced from the podcast. Okay. All right, thank you guys very much for tuning in. We will, of course, be back next week to talk about part two of the merge. Very excited to see how that goes. You can follow Dom at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. You can email us, domandcolin@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in. Take care, everybody.
I love you much. It's not enough. I love blowing you a love puff. Life is like a pipe, I'm a tiny penny rolling up the walls inside. We only said goodbye.